Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to Slamfire Radio, episode 53 for April the 18th, 2014. I am one of your hosts, Owen Flewelling.
I wasn't sure if you're going to say your name. I was just going to say, and I'm another one of your hosts.
Great, but you are another one of the hosts.
I am, and I'm Matthew, you know, the Warning Shot. Name is.
How about the third host?
I want to listen to you cut him off two more times.
Who, me?
I'm really enjoying this.
Huh.
He didn't even get his name out. That's awesome.
I know.
And I'm Trevor the Frelate. Pleasantly surprised.
That you didn't get cut off?
No, that you did.
I'll make that my new goal in life.
To cut me off.
Yes.
Yeah, that doesn't say much about your driving now, does it?
Oh.
Ooh, too soon? Too soon?
Jeez, I haven't even talked to the insurance people yet. All right, Matthew, why don't you tell us what you did in Guns with this week?
I would love to. First of all, I'd like to say that welcome everybody to our one-year anniversary show. And do we have something special lined up for you? Actually, we're going to take a break and let Chris Anderson do most of the show this week. So. Yeah. Chris is coming on later on, but we'll talk about that in a bit. What I did this week, I bought a Magpul grip for the AR.
Which one? The Maiad?
The Magpul one that you can put a little thing in the bottom.
Okay. Is it the one that you can adjust the back straps?
No. I got one that's not adjustable.
Cool.
Yeah. I didn't want the complicated parts and stuff. I like simplicity, so I just went with... just a regular one. I don't know what it's even called. It's the AR grip.
But it's the MOE grip, maybe?
It's an MOE something or other, yeah. But I think there's more than... Anyway, whatever. I got that thing because here's why. First of all, we're so technical. Yeah. Well, here's the technical specifications. It's a grippy thing, and there's stuff and whatnot.
Hole in the bottom.
Well, I have the A2 grip on it now, which isn't terribly comfortable, if I'm completely honest. I really like the way Owen's grip feels. I like the way Trevor's grip feels on their ARs.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yes. And here's the other thing. With the possibility of purchasing an EOTech, I want the capability of carrying spare batteries. And this grip has the removable floor plate thing where you can stick stuff up inside the grip. So I'm going to be putting two batteries up in there. Now, that being said, there is a specific core, it's called, the AA battery core, that will fit up in there. But the website where I got this from, which happened to be Questar, didn't have the AA battery core in stock, so I didn't purchase it. So if anybody knows where they have the AA core in stock for that grip, let me know, because I need one.
Jeff Reese sent me a text, said they just got a pallet full of Magpul goodness, all the odds and ends and the bits, like the single point sling mounts for shotguns and all that kind of Magpul stuff.
Cool.
So they may have it. And if not, they could get it because they're constantly getting Magpul. It's the only place to get my Magpul anymore.
All right, Jeff, you're listening. What do I mean, if you're listening? Jeff, hook me up.
but actually, Press Check Ventures has a Magpul stock that I keep saying I'm going to buy.
Haven't done yet.
No, and what's cool about it is it has the compartments on either side for batteries.
Right. I don't want that stock, though. I like my stock. Yeah. I just got a regular car stock, the M4 style sliding thing, and I like it. It's comfortable, and it works for what I need. So
I have ammo in my grip.
That's cool.
Grip has the one that holds four oh my God, I almost called them shells.
Four bullet shells, I believe they're called. Bullet shells.
Four rounds of 5.56 that stick inside the grip with like a rubber plug.
Yep, there's that one, and they also have the core that holds the CR123 batteries, and they also have one that holds a spare bolt.
Awesome.
Which is kind of cool, and firing pin. So
speaking of cool stalks that hold things.
It's okay, man. Yeah, just when you're done having your seizure there, just come on back and finish off what you were going to say.
Yeah, I just came down off a 40-foot roof. I'm, like, still shaking.
That's right, and you didn't fall.
I didn't.
Yet.
Yet. I was into the local gun shop today, and I saw they had 10-22s with the collapsible stocks that had magazines that clip in, like 10-round rotary 10-22 magazines that lock into the stock.
So you can clip your clips into the stock?
Can clip your mags into the stock. Yes,
that's cool.
I thought that was kind of neat. I took a picture of it. I'll send it to you sometime.
Yes, I would like to see that. So anyway, what else did I do here? I'm currently chatting with Steve Lee SMS, so sorry about that, got a little distracted. Beowulf shooting. So the Gen 2 Beowulf mags that Press Check Venture makes, they have their samples, and by they I mean Owen and I. So we got the 10 samples from the manufacturer, and we took them out to the range and loaded up some 50 Beowulf, and whoo boy, it fun.
So my shoulder still hurts.
Yeah, yeah.
I got lumps on my collarbone, and it's bruised.
If you can't handle it, I'll do the testing for you.
Already told me that I'm up next. So, but Trevor, yeah, you're welcome to come along, because I'm sure I'm not going to do much better.
But I invited Mo to come with me. Cool. I'd like that.
Yep. No, that's cool. We like Mo. Mo is neat. You can invite Pat, too, but we know he won't come because he lives too far away.
That's exactly what I said, yeah.
Yeah. So, Pat, you're invited. Man. So, yeah, we did that. We shot a little video. It's a little teaser kind of trailer type video. It's full of all kinds of apparently cheesy sound effects.
Did someone say that?
What's that?
Did someone say that?
Yes, I got a couple of comments on my YouTube page. They're like, "Oh, cheesy sound effects, man." So whatever, I don't care. I can take criticism.
You shoot a Beowulf, you can have all the cheesy sound effects you want.
Yeah, I banned them both on my channel, so it's no big deal. I'm kidding, I didn't, but I might. I
wondered why I couldn't get on there.
But no, I shot it with 60 frames per second on my my camera, and at that frame rate, it doesn't record sound. So I had to put in sound effects. So that's why I put them in. But anyway, it's kind of cool. So you can go check that out. That's all over Facebook and Gun Owners of Canada in the Press Check Ventures section. So if you want to check out that video, you can go there. Or, of course, my YouTube channel, MMatt. So, and finally, and this was fun. I talked about this a little bit last week, how I believe Jason Philp, keeps tagging me and stuff, and I ended up getting drawn into this conversation with this anti-gunner who owns guns. So I guess, for lack of a better word, he's a FUD, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it.
So he's okay with his guns. He just doesn't want anybody else to own any other types of guns. He's not for concealed carry in Canada whatsoever. Sees no purpose for handguns and the like. And in fact says that, look to the States for a perfect example of how having too many guns increases your crime rate. So he actually, and I had pretty much stepped out of the conversation at this point, because I'd sent him statistics, I'd sent him links, I'd sent him articles, and he basically said, "I'm too busy to read your stuff." So I said, "Okay, so I'm basically arguing with a brick wall, because if you're not going to listen to my sources, why would you listen to me? So clearly there's no point in me continuing to debate you." So I would basically bowed out of the conversation. But then he comes back with, and I just couldn't help myself, because he said, "Go ahead and look up the violent crime rates of Canada, the United States, and Australia." Then he said, "Don't look up the gun crime rates. Look up the total violent crime rate." And I said, "Yes, sir, I will."
I'd be more than happy to, yeah.
I was thrilled that he asked me. And so I went ahead and I went to the FBI statistics website. I went to StatsCan, which gives us all of Canada's websites statistics. And I went to the Australian version of that as well. Australia has their own statistics type organization. Now, these are government-run organizations that don't mess with the numbers. They just collect them and give them out, raw data. So I took those. Then I went and I looked up the population for each country, figured out the rate per 100,000. Canada has a violent crime rate of just under 1,200 events per 100,000 people. Australia has 800 and some. And the United States, with more guns per capita than any other country in the world, has less than 400. So I went ahead and posted that on Facebook, and wouldn't you know, the guy just hasn't replied yet. Couldn't understand why. So anyway, I just couldn't pass up a juicy tidbit like that, so I had to strike when the iron was hot, so to speak. So I had a little bit of fun with him, and maybe he'll read it and change his mind, but I doubt it. He seemed like somebody pretty set in his ways. But it's just really cool to see how statistics, the cold hard facts, they are literally on our side. We don't have to make up anything. We got it. It's the other side making up stuff. It's just nice to see that in action once again. So
yeah, this is not a guy you're going to convert. It's the people in the middle on both sides of the argument that both sides are trying to convert. Him coming over and agreeing to conceal carry would be as likely as you agreeing that conceal carry is not necessary.
Right. It's just not going to happen. And he's firmly in his camp. I'm firmly in mine. But, you know, eventually, maybe if he gets pounded over the head enough times with, you know, the actual statistics and the actual proof, you know, the truth, if you will, you know, maybe he'll be able to eventually one day come to the realization that he may, in fact, be wrong. But yeah, I'm not holding my breath, and I'm not really concerned. I just wanted to win. And so I did.
Some people, you can present them with all the facts and logic and science that you want,
and it doesn't make a difference.
No.
Yep. So anyway, that was me. It was fun. Owen, what did you do, man? I heard you put in a new stove.
I heard you did some body work to your car.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. I knew I should wait until after the show, but anyway. Yeah, as far as gun-related things, I didn't do anything.
Oh.
I may go shooting tomorrow.
Well, you did actually go to the range with me and shoot the Beowulf.
Yes, but you
couldn't. While you were sick.
That's true.
Yeah.
I was pretty sick.
And you stepped up like the man that you are and whined about it all the way there and back. But you went.
I felt bad, too. I realized afterwards, I was like, man, I was really a whiny b- the whole time.
It's no big deal. I understand. You had a really bad man cold.
Man cold. No, it wasn't a man cold.
It wasn't. At all. It was bad. It was really, like, you were not in good shape.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well.
I felt like puking the whole time.
But I'm just glad you went, because I didn't want to go by myself.
Yeah. No, I understand. I mean, guns are scary, and you need me to hold your hand.
I hate you right now. So, Trevor.
Trevor, what did you do?
Well, I'm going to give point-by-point review of the
1997. Oh, a point-by-point. No, this isn't going to take long at all. Hold on while I mute my mic.
But before I do, you two are also residents of this fine province. Have you noticed in your areas an increase in turkey vultures over the last couple of years?
No.
These things around my area are getting to be almost a daily occurrence. And right now they're having a field day. There's a dead deer in Charlo. They've got it picked clean to the bone, and a dead coyote just outside of Camelton. And I was driving by today, and there was three of them on that coyote. I thought I was in the Serengeti, like vultures picking a gazelle's bones clean. It's crazy. They're huge birds, and they've got that red vulture head. And I'm just waiting to find out if we can. I'm going to call DNR and find out if we can plug these things, because yeah, they clean up stuff, but they're not native. They've just kind of migrated in here. They're not native to this province, so I'm wondering if we can.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to have to do, like, wildlife study and see if we're actually overpopulated, and if we are, then I think they'd probably release a tag for them or something.
Because they're competing with native scavengers, and they're a varmint. They're not like an eagle. Or
which does the exact same thing but looks a lot better, so it's clearly the better animal.
I'm all about animal interviews, right? You line them up to put them on a truck. What do you do? I'm a cow. You're a baseball glove. Get on the truck. What do you do? I'm an otter. What do you do? I swim around on my back and do cute little human things with my hands.
Oh, you go to the zoo.
You know, I ripped that completely off of Dennis Leary. But anyway.
That's okay. Yeah, it was funny. I'd never heard it before.
That's the turkey vultures. Okay. It's like Christmas here. My T97 came in today. My Trubor will be back tomorrow with a new aluminum grip installed on it, a new aluminum mainspring arch mainspring housing, tuned, ready to go. My Versamax and my 870 barrel will be here on Friday. So it's like, woohoo! All my guns are back, plus I got this new T97. So I'm going to do a quick little review of the T97. So I'm going to start with the pros. Also, I there are photos
on Facebook.
On Facebook of this on a scale and both my airs on a scale and this and my NEA 15 on the ground next to a measuring tape to show you just how compact this gun is compared to an air with a 14.5-inch barrel.
Yeah, I saw those. Those are neat. I cannot wait to play with that tomorrow.
Oh, man. So, okay, initial impressions of it. It's not as ugly as it appears in photographs. The overall fit and finish of it is a lot better than I expected from a Norinco product. Of course, you know, my experience with Norincos have been like M14 Norincos, 1911 Norincos, and that god-awful 780 Homeland Security thing.
Yeah, that thing was awesome. Remember how it exploded that one time when you shot it?
Yeah, that was fantastic. So Muffin took one look at this today and he said, you know, you bought a bunch of junk Kel-Tecs that you sold because they were plastic, and this thing is all plastic too. And I'm like,
So you're probably going to end up selling it to me later on?
No, because
he's going to sell it to me because I'm the guy who buys all the guns that he doesn't like.
That's true, but I'm not selling it. I'm going to replace the plastic with aluminum, and I won't feel like I'm putting lipstick on a pig because this is a neat gun. So, okay, so pro number one, it's short and it's compact. And, I mean, it really is. It's,
wow.
Yeah, it's very short. It's very compact. It's so...
Let me guess, it's short and compact?
Yeah, but you know how the back of the Tavor is really big?
Mm-hmm.
This is... The back of this gun is maybe 4 inches.
So right? It's svelte.
Yeah, it is, yeah. The upper and lower are tight. It's kind of about the same amount of play as like a... Maybe less than a mil-spec AR, you know? It doesn't feel cheap and flimsy, which is important. I'm glad, because if I picked it up and I felt like I was holding junk, then I would have been pretty disappointed. But overall, it does not feel cheap when you pick it up. Another pro is that it is chambered in actual 5.56. So if you worry about that sort of thing, which I do, but Matthew doesn't, you know, it's an actual 5.56, which means that if you follow the Sammy spec book and you don't want to interchange those two cartridges, well, you can shoot 223 and 5.56 in this, where if it was supposed to be a legitimate 223 chambering, you could only shoot 223 and not 5.56. So I always prefer to have my guns chambered in actual 5.56. It's lightweight. It weighs, the pictures are on Facebook, it's under 8 pounds, where my NEA is over 8 pounds, and my STI competition one, the one I want to actually be the lightest, is the heaviest at over 9 pounds. So it's lightweight. Somebody had said that it weighed as much as an AR. It does not. It's actually quite a bit lighter than an AR. Now, that being said, the NEA
it weighs as much as most ARs. The NEA is a heavy barrel.
Yeah, heavy barrel and heavy handguard, right? So,
I found the handguard is not as bad. Remember, you took the handguard off and weighed it, and it actually weighed less than, like, I think the Daniel Defense one. Was it Daniel Defense? No, it was another one you had.
Oh, in fairness, though, the Samson handguard is longer.
The Samson, right.
Yeah.
But it was actually lighter. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I found that the barrels tended to be what make the NEA heavy, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, the barrel on the 14-inch is probably heavier than a 16.5-inch DPMS barrel.
Yeah.
So, it comes with a really nifty cleaning kit that is stored inside the grip, so that's cool. The gun, being short and compact, is very well balanced. You can hold it up to your shoulder with one hand, and you do not feel the need to support the front of the gun. It's not rear heavy. It's really well balanced. The center of gravity appears to be right over your grip. So when you're holding it up with one hand, it doesn't feel heavy in the front or heavy in the back. It's right where the center of gravity should be on the grip.
Nice. So that's important, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cons. The plastic is slick. It's not well textured. It's very, very slippery. So that's not a good thing. There's not enough texturing or stippling on the grip. The forend where your hand goes is ribbed, but still the plastic is slick, so I'm not a fan of that. The trigger is plastic, which I did not enjoy on my Kel-Tec. I would much prefer an aluminum trigger, but it is being worked on by T97.ca, the same people who make the aluminum upper, are working on aluminum handguard and an aluminum trigger, and a it's a safety, but it's not a true safety. So basically, you could turn your safety, the factory safety on this gun, you could switch it to safe, and then there's like a cross bolt safety that goes behind the where you would normally expect a safety to be, right around the fire controls. So there's all kinds of improvements coming out by them. So
yeah, having that safety back there is weird. Having it up where they're moving it, that makes sense. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that being done because it'll make it a lot more ergonomic.
The third con that I have listed here is the grip itself is quite small. It's a little short and the diameter is very small. So you just feel like you're going to crush it in your hand. It's not that comfortable.
Crush it! Maybe you can get like a different one, put it on. Maybe you could wrap it in tape or something.
You could. Actually, you could get a Hoag overmold or you could get some tennis grip tape or something, you know, and build it up if you really wanted to. The Magwell sucks. It's not flared in any way whatsoever, and it's very tight. It seems to like GI mags, aluminum GI mags, best of all. Everything else is very tight in it, but if you have an aluminum GI mag, they will drop freely. Some guys on CGN are filing them to open them up some. I'm going to look into that. I'm afraid to do any kind of milling work to the receiver because I don't want to turn it into a paperweight. Right. You can always take off, but it's hard to put back on. The mag release is on the wrong side, but when you learn the manual of arms, there is a way to do it to make that work. What else? The safety, the throw of the safety is a full 180 degrees instead of just like 90 degrees, so that sucks. There's also no external bolt release, which kind of sucks. If you want to lock the bolt open, you got to stick your finger up inside the magwell. The charging handle is cool. It's ambidextrous, and it's on the top of the receiver, but when you're letting the charging handle come forward, your fingers get caught in the front of the carry handle. They should almost have an extension made so the charging handle is back in the center of the
Well, you shouldn't be riding the handle forward anyway, right? Pull it back and let go?
Well, it depends what you're doing.
I suppose.
Sometimes I'm one of those fussy guys where I don't like to slam a bolt against a chamber unless there's brass there. But
right.
But yeah, if you're loading the gun, absolutely you snap it and let it go. But okay, neutrals. The trigger's fine. There's nothing wrong with the trigger on this gun, even for a bullpup. The travel may be a little long, but the break is good. It's not overly spongy. It's really, you know, I have no issue with the trigger on this gun. The sights are mil-spec. Front post is adjustable. The rear has apertures, and you can pop the gun up with both eyes open and see through the rear aperture and get the front sight. No problem. There's no perceptible difference in cheek weld. I don't feel like because the sight is at the top of the carry handle, it's no different than the sight being at the top of a carry handle on an AR that has a carry handle on top of the receiver. Doesn't mess up your cheek weld. It looks really high in the pictures, but it's not that bad. Field stripping, whatever. You learn how to do it, and then it's done like anything else. A lot of people have been saying online that they destroy the brass. So I asked Luke Giroux. Luke Giroux picked it up for a moment. He shot it, and I asked him to collect some of the brass for me. So I took three of the worst pieces of brass that were there. They were significantly dented, but they did come out fine when I resized them. So,
well, that's good.
Keep your.
So it's not actually destroying the brass. It's just denting it like a lot of semis do.
Yeah, yeah. And some, I know, I'm sure there are some pieces that may not fully come out. And just, you know, if you're worried about that, you're going to reload, keep your T97 brass separately and inspect it after you've resized it and then decide if it's destroyed or not.
Sure.
Sling mounts cannot be adjusted. There's one in the front, one in the back, and nothing in the middle. So there's no way of putting an ambi in the center. You could maybe try an ambi on the back, but anyway, it does have sling mounts. They are fixed. I'm neutral to that. It's not a plus or a minus for me. The manual of arms, it's not that bad. It really is not. You keep your hand on the fire control, and you do everything with your support hand. You just bring it back to the safety. There's a way to release the mag by bringing your hand up to the mag well, reaching around, and using your index finger to hit the mag release, and the mag drops.
Cool.
And then that's it for the review, but I got to say, whoever riveted the mag that it came with, wow, there's a pop rivet in the front and in the back, and I'm pretty sure that you could see them from space. They're that big. They look like two satellite dish saucers on the front and back of the mag.
Nice.
So first overall impressions, I've yet to fire it. I'm really anxious to see what kind of accuracy I get. But overall impressions, I'm happy with it.
Good. Well, that's good. I like I said, I can't wait to play with it tomorrow and the next
and,
day.
And this is, I would describe as lightly used.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I got it for $8.50, so you can't kick on that.
Cool.
No, it's good. Yeah. All right. Good. Well, let's move along to upcoming events and news. We have the SFR flyer that's up on the Facebook page, correct?
Well, the one that you want is the one on our website. My wife actually pointed out a typo to me. So don't copy the one from Facebook. Go to the link.
Okay, yeah, go to the link at the website, and you can download that and print it off and post it all over the place and send us a picture of you doing that, and you might actually win, you know, something really...
It's kind of mediocre, really, boring. To be perfectly honest. Yeah. You're going to, you can come on the show with us. Yeah.
Ooh, well, big whoop. Ooh. That's probably why nobody's done it yet.
Probably.
T-shirt orders. We have, let me see, we've got one original run XXL available.
That is an XXL, right, Trevor? The one that you have? Trevor? we lost Trevor. Okay,
no, you didn't lose me. I was muting because I was clicking and stuff.
Yeah.
It is a double XL. That's correct. It's black double XL original run.
Perfect. Okay.
Okay. And go make a bid on the one that's a long sleeve shirt. Would you say it's on our Facebook page?
Yes, that will be whenever I get around to it. I have the pictures taken. I just need to actually upload them to the Facebook page. And then whoever gets the highest bid, and we're going to do this until... We get a good number of bids. We haven't decided how long yet.
Well, we have a reserve. We have a reserve. So there.
Sure, we have a reserve. But basically, all the funds raised from this, including everything, will be going to
charity.
The Laurentides Foundation. So, it's a good cause. So, when I do finally get around to posting it, go put some bids on it, and you can get the one of a kind original long sleeve. Slamfire Radio t-shirt.
By our mistake.
So, coming up next, we got the charity shoot, June 28th, the Rest of Goose Gun Club, and special guest of Steve Lee. There'll be trap, small bore silhouette, rifle shooting, and in the afternoon, an Ipswich style mini match. And all funds are going to be donated to the Laurentides Autism Foundation. And I think we've already got money donated from Trevor being thrown in the snow and all
that.
Yeah,
we've got $250 so far, I think, something like that.
Yeah, so we're off to a good start. Practical Armed Response Academy shooting course is full.
Oh, no, one spot left.
Was there one? Oh, no, yeah, I should read the notes.
Yeah, that's
There's one space currently available. If you want to get in on that, the payment is due now.
Basically, yes.
If you want to get in, send us your money. That's what gets you in.
Basically, yep.
Yep. And, that's day one is with Mag 40 instructor Tommy Nelson of the Gun Dudes. Day two is an Ipswich club level match, and anybody can come to that. Even if you can't get in on the course, you can still come to that, the Ipswich match. Multi-gun pre-registration form is up on the Rest of Goose website, Rest of Goose Gun Club website, and that's for August 16th and 17th, 12 stages over 2 days. $40 is the registration fee. So that's always a good time. It's going to be big this year, right, Trevor?
Yeah, still working out round counts. I did them yesterday and came to like 223.
It was a great round count. 223, come on.
I know, right? 130 of which were rifle.
Which was perfect. And he's like, but I got a new shotgun. I got to put more shotgun stages in.
Well, the truth is, though, Matthew, you know, if you're trying, I'm using the proper ratio of stages, 6 short, 4 medium, and 2 long.
Yeah.
And then, so you also need a balance of the rounds per fire.
Of course
fire,
you do.
Right?
I know.
So,
yeah, well, except you don't, because this isn't Ipswich. This is yours, and you can do whatever you like.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it's not shock and awe either. It's still kind of...
Yeah.
Carry on.
All right. Thunderbird Tactical Carbine Clinic. Big news on this one. Two new spots available. So
one new spot available.
Oh, one.
Luke.
How come it says two here?
Because Trevor didn't update it.
I updated the spreadsheet. I didn't update the notes.
Luke's there. Now it says one new spots available.
Yeah.
One new spots.
Okay. One new spots.
This is with Master Instructor Daniel Shaw, as many of you know.
I'm going to get him to run my T97. He doesn't know it yet.
Here's a Chinese carbine. Daniel, have fun.
So that's October the 11th, $200 if you want to get in that last spot. And
I did hear from that other participant who's delayed in his payment, but I still haven't heard any emails from...
I get paid tomorrow, so...
Just saying. I just like teasing you guys about it, that's all.
I have you down for the May 2nd paycheck.
Okay, yeah, cool. Long as you can pencil me in there, it'll be all good.
I didn't expect Casey to come through so quickly.
Yeah. Things happen, man. Like guns. Yeah, okay. Guns are cool.
Yeah, guns are cool.
Yeah, guns are cool. Okay, so up next, we have a quick audio ad from Chris regarding the supper that he's putting on, the event supporting the Swiss Arms Confiscation case. So we'll run that now, and in just a second, we'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. Chris Anderson here. This is the reclassification interview episode with Ed Berlew. If you like this episode, you'll like this event. The Spring Swiss Arms Fork It Over Fundraiser. This is a nonprofit event. All proceeds go to the Swiss Arms Reclassification Challenge. The date, April 26, 2014. Start time, 5:30 p.m. Address, 6 Eugene Street in Toronto. Head over to www.thebks.ca. That takes you to the website for the banquet hall. You can order tickets over the phone or by email. Tickets, $100. What do you get? Vegas-style buffet, free parking at the venue, plus all ticket holders are entered for door prize draws. Also, keep your ticket because after the event, you can take it to Al Flaherty's Outdoor Store and get a free hat with your next purchase. The bar is a cash bar with proceeds going to the challenge. And if you need more info, head over to chrisandersonpresents.com, click on the events tab, and scroll down. All the information is there. Edward L. Berlew is Canada's foremost firearms law expert. He's the guest speaker for the event. He is currently leading a class action lawsuit to fight the reclassification of the Swiss Arms series of rifles. So what's new with the event this week? New sponsors. Wolverine Supplies donated a Utah shotgun. Very cool. These things are totally space age. Canada in the Rough is the nation's number one hunting and outdoor show. They're helping get the word out on the event. And also, Canada Ammo is our hat sponsor for the event. Google search our sponsors and find out what they're all about. They donated, so they get to speak out now. Canada Ammo comes with 10 years of industry experience, and it's our goal to give customers the finest products from around the globe at discounted prices. For $899.99, receive a Glock G17 Gen 4 pistol and one 750-round case of LCW 9mm ammo, or pick up a 1,120-round case of Norinco 223 Remington for only $319, or a 1,200-round case of Norinco Copperwash 7.62x39 for just $349, all non-corrosive. We serve customers through efficient mail orders. Visit our website to place your order today, www.canadaammo.com, with free shipping on all orders over $200. For 10 straight years, Canada in the Rough has been Canada's most watched hunting show. Meticulously produced, expertly photographed, and ultimately in a league of its own, Canada in the Rough has become a must-watch for all hunters and outdoor enthusiasts. Follow the Beasley brothers each week on their journey exploring and hunting the greatness of Canada. Watch Saturday and Sunday mornings on OLN and Sun News, and make sure you join their crew on Facebook. Wolverine Supplies, your one-stop shop for everything firearms. Just 10 miles northeast of Verdun, Manitoba, in the scenic Assiniboine Valley, Wolverine Supplies caters to all types of shooters with a full inventory of firearms, optics, ammunition, and accessories. You can expect quality service, and Wolverine Supplies will stand behind everything they sell. Whether you're a first-time buyer or an experienced target shooter, they look forward to serving you. Visit the store in Verdun or shop online 24/7 at wolverinesupplies.com. We can't forget about our first sponsor, Al Flaherty's Outdoor Store. Head over to their website and you'll see Winchester Super Target Loads, 12-gauge, 2¾-inch, 250 shells, just $60. Also, Beretta PX4 pistols and 9mm, normal price $750, now just $650. Also, check out Mystic Precision. These guys are on the west coast of Canada, and they've sent their support to us cross-country. They sell optics, reloading supplies, accessories. Do a Google search and check out Mystic Precision today. We look forward to more sponsors joining in on the Swiss Arms Reclassification Challenge.
I'm Ed Berlew, and I want to see you at the Swiss Arms Fundraiser Dinner.
All right, well, thanks again, Chris, for setting that up and doing that. And please don't slow down. Go ahead and take away the next 45 minutes, if you will.
You can probably hear a little bit of background noise. That's the sound of my car running and the heat being turned on because it is freezing cold in my car. I've just gotten out of the courthouse. It's the conclusion of day one of the two-day trial for January 30th and 31st, 2012 for Ian Thompson on the two charges of unsafe storage. And I've just gotten out after having had a word with Ed Berlew, who is Ian Thompson's lawyer, on my way out of the courtroom. And I have to say that there were a lot of ups and downs during the day. There were some technical difficulties. They had problems with the court recording equipment. A recess was called to fix that. And there were some other technical difficulties as well with being able to make sure that everyone involved could hear what everyone else was saying and it was being recorded properly by the court. And once those difficulties were gotten over, things started to happen. It's interesting because I'd never actually sat through a court process before and watched everything happen the way it did in this case, and it was interesting to see how it all worked. It's nothing like court TV. if you watch the shows with the detectives and court cases and all the drama, it's absolutely nothing like that. It's very dry, very repetitive, very methodical, basically going over the same ground and same details over and over and over again to ensure clarity. But a lot of clarity was ensured, and I actually did get to listen to the testimony of Ian Thompson, as well as several police officers as well. I have a very good feeling about this case. That's what I'll leave it at for now. Unfortunately, due to a prior commitment, I can't make it for day two. I was hoping that the trial would be wrapped up on day one, but the technical difficulties in the courtroom made that an impossibility. So it looks like the trial will go on to the second day. But I am looking forward to a positive result for Ian Thompson. I did get to shake his hand and give him my best wishes. I also got to shake Ed's hand and thank him for everything he was doing. I'm looking forward to that positive resolution, and I am interested in doing a follow-up with Ed Berlew just to bring everything together once the entire matter is resolved. So I'm recording this in advance of that follow-up podcast just as a historical note to say I was here, I came down. By the way, thank you very much to our fellow gun nuts and local gun club representatives who are here. There are many members of local gun clubs who showed up. We had a good crowd. About 20 people were in evidence supporting Ian Thompson. I also like to thank several representatives from the NFA who showed up. So it's good to see them in attendance, putting up the flag and basically representing for their gun rights organization. And I'd like to thank everyone who sent in letters of support, emails, who's called Ian Thompson to give him moral support. And I'd also like to thank everyone who sent in a donation. I myself have sent in several donations to help defray the cost of his trial. And I'll be in touch with Ed to see if there are any additional costs after the trial is closed, because there may be another opportunity to make a donation and help Mr. Thompson out. That's it for now. I'm going to sign off. And the next time you hear this recording, it'll be attached to the follow-up episode. Thanks, everyone. Take care, and I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
A piece of audio history from 2012 recorded in my car outside the courtroom where the Ian Thompson trial was going on. Those of you who follow the trial know that the charges against Ian Thompson were dropped. At his side during the trial was firearms lawyer Ed Berlew. I'd been looking forward to interviewing Ed Berlew again, and I found myself back at his office, this time on a different note. This interview has to do with the reclassification of guns by the RCMP. The reclassification of several very popular and expensive guns by the RCMP has grabbed the attention of an entire nation. Even the mainstream media has put focus on the reclassification issue. The owners of the popular Swiss Arms and CZ-858 series of rifles find themselves in the crosshairs of gun confiscation. There's been a lot of talk and rumors surrounding the reclassifications. However, as a gun owner, you may have some very practical questions about the situation, especially in regards to the two-year amnesty that was recently put into effect by the government. If you own one of the reclassified guns, you may be wondering, can I transport the gun? Can I still shoot it at the range? Can I still take it hunting? How can I legally store the gun? Can I transfer or sell the gun to another person? And can I strip the gun for parts? I went to the office of Edward L. Berlew to ask these questions. He's a lawyer who specializes in firearms law and is most well known for his recent involvement in the Ian Thompson trial. He is also currently involved in a class action lawsuit to support the owners of the Swiss Arms rifles. If you are an owner of one of the prohibited rifles, you may be interested in supporting the class action lawsuit. We'll get into that later on in the episode. However, first, we need some background on the situation. Ed speaks out on the practical points for owners of these now prohibited guns. We, of course, spend some time discussing some of the unconfirmed and speculative aspects of the current situation, but then again, concrete information has been in short supply. So, without further ado, the man whose radio voice puts mine to shame, Ed Berlew. Take one. Just to get a level, what did you eat for breakfast today?
What I had for breakfast? Oh my god, I started on a juice diet.
For real?
For real. For real. I'm easing into it. I just had whatever was in the fridge. Carrots, cucumbers, lemon, and I drank it down.
All right.
Oh my god. I survived it.
Well, you've got the vitamins going. We're rolling. Take one. We only get one
take. We get one take.
One take. With
Same like life. One take in life, baby.
Exactly. I'm here in the office of Ed Berlew. He's, of course, no stranger to the podcast. I've interviewed him several times before, most notably on the Ian Thompson trial. If you don't know about the Ian Thompson trial, do a Google search. Check it out. Very important for Canadian gun issues. And recently, we're here because the RCMP has been reclassifying firearms. Now, this has been going on for some time now, and until recently, the reclassifications only involved firearms that had a small number of owners. Up until this point, when firearms have been reclassified, the firearms owners have been offered financial compensation to turn in the reclassified guns. The RCMP has now started to reclassify guns that are far more popular. The first was the Swiss Arms series of rifles, probably about 2,000 owners of that particular firearm in this country, which was closely followed by the reclassification of the CZ-858 rifle. Talk has been that these guns would be reclassified and would have to be turned in by their owners without any financial compensation. Now, the Swiss rifles are very expensive depending on when the owner bought their rifle. They could be priced anywhere from the high 2,000s to the low 3,000s. Depends. They're also special editions, which were more expensive. The CZ-858 is less expensive, with models retailing under $1,000, but there are a lot more of those guns out there. Literally thousands of them, and combined between the Swiss and the CZ, it'd be fair to say that there's potentially maybe 20,000 owners across Canada who may be affected by this. These are law-abiding citizens who, with a press of a button, became criminals in possession of prohibited firearms. And Ed, what's the minimum mandatory sentence for possession of a prohibited firearm without appropriate licensing?
Well, if you don't have any ammunition, they'll probably want to put you in jail for a year. But if you have ammunition for that prohib, that's Section 95 of the Criminal Code. And right now, that has a minimum mandatory of 3 years in a federal penitentiary.
The ammo, it's very common stuff, 7.62 by 39. You can get it at any gun store, same
and
with 223.
Yeah. It's everywhere. It's everywhere.
Round. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's most upsetting about this is these guns have never been used in crime. This is merely a political move by a police force. It is a move by a police force to show that it has a political activity that it's carrying out. And they are ignoring both the Canadian public and those who represent them in Parliament.
Now, recently, the government announced an amnesty. At first, there was talk that it would be 5 years. Now, it seems to have been cut down to 2 years. For practical purposes, many people won't know what the amnesty means. Before we get into the amnesty, which is a little bit more complex, let's talk about the history of confiscation, because for new gun owners, people who are new to the sport, they may not remember what's gone on in the past over the past few decades. This isn't the first time that firearms have been confiscated. It's not the first time it's been done without compensation. In fact, how often is compensation given in terms of firearms being confiscated?
Well, it's given very rarely. They did it on a couple guns recently. That recently is the last 5-6 years. But even under the Harper government, there's been more guns reclassified than since C-68 became law. More has been done under the Harper government for that. One of the biggest, losses of guns, and it's a type of confiscation, it was a very big issue, was the reclassification, renaming of the 12-6 owners. And I was one of those people. I bought my Chief's Special and another couple short-barreled handguns between the date in 1995, I think it was February 14th, 1995, and the coming into effect of C-68. And I wasn't allowed to keep them, and that bothered me. I had to hand them in. There's really not much of a market for them. They're worth $20 each these days. The problem became that then spurred me to act for the other people. And I have to tell you, there were tens of thousands of those people who lost those guns. In the end, we ended up representing about 1,500 of them in a consolidated action, where we lost because of the interpretation of the statute. While we were doing that lawsuit, there was a movement underway to have a change made by Parliament. But at that time, the Harper government was in minority, and they just couldn't do anything. So all these people lost their guns without compensation. I mean, they may have bought a gun for, you know, $800 or $1,000 even. Either they turned it in or they took it down to a gun store and they got $20 for it.
Now let's talk about the methodology behind the current reclassifications, because that issue is a little bit...
Well, you give it too much credibility to call it methodology. I mean, it's not methodology. That's the whole point. The point of the matter is that, and I've had experience in dealing with RCMP forensic, they don't have a methodology. They have an ad hoc system. There is no written criteria that they've laid out since the beginning. They don't follow a written criteria. I've had them in the past, as a demonstrable situation, say that a Remington patented 22 long rifle chassis, I use the word chassis because I want barreled action, when equipped with the furniture of an AK-47 is prohibited. But when equipped with the furniture of an M16 is non-restricted. It's the same gun. If you take the furniture off either one of them, you've just got a 1947 Remington. That's the Arms Corps AK-22. It's not a listed gun, but they have chosen to call that a variant of an AK-47. It doesn't have the duty cycle. It doesn't have the power. It shares no internal parts. It's a different type of mechanism. That is not methodology. That is ad hoc attack on the public.
So let's get into the FRT, because that seems to be where things burst out with the reclassification. For those who don't know, the RCMP has something called the FRT. What does FRT stand for? Who controls it? And what is the status of the FRT in law?
Well, now we're getting into something. Well, the FRT stands for the Firearms Registration Table. That's what it stands for. It is a series of laboratory reports, period. It is not regulatory law. It is not legislative law. It is a series of laboratory reports made by RCMP forensic workers. These are civilian workers. They examine firearms and they make a report. They've got a huge number of these firearms that are on there. They basically try to get everything in the world. They went down to the Smithsonian, they looked. They went to factories and they looked. And in some cases, they just looked at catalogs, and they never examined the firearms. And that's why it can't have the credibility that people give it. However, the police give it credibility and lay a charge on it because it's a police expert opinion. And that's how we find out what's on the FRT. Here's another very important point about the FRT. It's a secret document. You and I cannot just access the FRT. We just can't. We have to go through a government course and swear oaths and take tests to become verifiers under the Firearms Act. And then we are allowed to look at the current version of the FRT. Since this has occurred with the reclassifications, the archived versions have been taken offline and cannot be accessed. Now, that's rewriting history.
If the RCMP wants to claim that a gun has a full auto receiver or that is capable of going full auto, do they actually have to go into the machine shop and physically convert the gun to fire full auto in order to make this claim, let's say with the 8.58 or the Swiss?
Well, one would think that that would be the first thing you have to do, because what they're doing is they're basing this on the Hasselwinder decision. Okay. Now, I know the technician who worked for the OPP. He was an armorer with the OPP who actually sat in the courtroom, and he converted in a matter of like 5 minutes in a courtroom in Newmarket a semi-automatic Tommy gun, the old one from the 1920s, the Roaring 20s, and that was also used in the war by Allied troops. He took that and reconverted it to full auto. So, in other words, that was a gun always made full auto, you know, by the manufacturers, etc. And he converted it back. It was rather simple to do a little bit of filing, a little bit of tweaking, put the bolt back in, and it would just run. It would run full auto. I use that to say if a gun runs, it runs full auto. That standard was established over 20 years ago. So you think that you'd have to do that. Well, they didn't. They didn't do that with the 8.58. There's a report from the most senior RCMP forensic people that was released in January of this year, 2014, and they said they never made one run full auto. They said that it could be done in 20 or 30 minutes. Well, that's a rough estimate, and that's bogus. That's a nice word. It's bogus because you'd have to remove with a machine shop, with a milling machine done by a qualified operator, very familiar with this, you'd have to remove several blocks and permanently welded up slots in the gun just to start to have that receiver approach a full auto. Moreover, you'd have to manufacture parts that are non-existent in Canada and for which there are new blueprints to create the interrupters and the sears on the trigger mechanism for the full auto trigger mechanism. They don't have this. They didn't do it. They said they didn't do it. Yet, they reclassified it. That just doesn't seem to make scientific sense. And the RCMP forensic is supposed to be about science, not about maybes. Mm-hmm. Science is stuff that is proven in a scientific manner. Well, we learned that in high school.
Well, this is a so-called laboratory report. So if there is a listing generated on this FRT, is there any way to challenge their listing or their determination?
Well, I'm going to quote from the words, and I'm not going to say his name because he'd be embarrassed by this, but he wasn't embarrassed when he said it in court. We were in court in Thunder Bay challenging the reclassification of the Walther G22. That, by the way, is still going on. And the Federal Department of Justice lawyer rose up and said to the judge that the only way to challenge the FRT is from the prisoner's box when facing a criminal charge.
Wow.
And I said, you've got to be kidding.
To challenge a lab report.
That's correct. He said that you cannot challenge it in any other way. We then went to Superior Court, and Superior Court said he's not quite right, but that is their position, that you can only challenge it from the prisoner's dock. That means that you faced a criminal charge, you're on a house arrest bail, and your guns have all been taken. Unbelievably inhumane.
So, speaking of the FRT, there's been talk by the government about removing the power to manipulate the FRT from the RCMP and placing it in the hands of some kind of civilian committee. Now, this may, on the outside to some people, seem like a good idea, but what you have to do is take a look in and see all the potential outcomes, good and bad, and the potential for abuse. So, with this proposed committee, what are some of the things that we have to look out for? What could this change in terms of the power of the FRT and its strength in law?
You know, if the listeners would hear, they'd be seeing me doing a double face palm.
He's doing the double face palm. He is.
This committee, from the standpoint of a defense lawyer whose job is to ensure the freedom of gun owners, is not good. That's the strongest word I'm going to use. I think that's inflammatory enough. It is not good. It is not in the benefit of the gun owner. Let me tell you why. Right now, we have a bureaucracy that makes the FRT. We've explained that that is just a series of lab reports. They're authored by one or maybe two RCMP forensic civilian people. They're just lab reports. At this point, we're able to go and we can get our own expert, or even stand up and do it ourselves and use demonstrations and use technical language and use patents, because every gun has several patents involved in its production or expired patents, and show that there are dissimilarities between guns being variants or being converted full auto, etc. Now, let's imagine that you wanted to strengthen the lab reports, because that's what the FRT is. You want to strengthen the lab reports. You see, the good idea is, well, let's get the RCMP out of this business. This committee enshrines the RCMP because it's proposed that the committee have an RCMP member. It's proposed that the committee have 6 members, so that would result in ties. It is proposed that they have another Center for Forensic Science person from the Ontario Center for Forensic Science, and I've had issues with those people being biased in the reports on firearms when I've been defending people and many, many types of charges. And then we'd have four from industry. Now, what that means is, if these people make a missed decision, and I believe every decision of a committee can be an imprecise decision, then how do I challenge that as your lawyer defending your freedom in a court of law? All of a sudden, that forensic report added to the FRT has much more influence, much more power. And I will have a harder time dragging it down and saying that it's wrong so that you can walk free of the prisoner's docket. I don't like that. The other problem is when this committee is made, there has to be procedures. There has to be procedures on how they will receive items, how they will do this. And they have to establish criteria. It is no good to establish a committee without having established the criteria. That's the problem that exists now.
Well, even basic things like when do you submit, how long does it take to get a determination, is there an appeal process for an incorrect classification?
And all of that, including the appeal process, would strengthen what goes on in terms of the answers and opinions of the committee. And then is there a time limit whereby, well, once you miss the time limit, it's just solid. You can't challenge it. That would be an abomination, especially when we have things that will occur and have occurred, which is non-restricted firearms becoming prohibited or restricted. How do you know? How do you get notice of this decision? What if you're the person with the information and you can't get before the committee because you're not given notice? No. Nobody should be able to judge your property in your possession without you having notice of it and being there and being able to have an input. And that should not be done just in the court of law. I'm concerned that the committee will make the FRT the power of a regulation, which it is not now. And I think that it will be detrimental to the rights of innocent gun owners across Canada.
So now moving on to more practical things, because we have folks out there who own these firearms and they have very practical questions. One day they're fine, the next day they're not. They need to know certain things. So first of all, let's talk about the amnesty. What is the amnesty? What does it do?
The amnesty does very little. First of all, the amnesty does not correct the reclassification. The amnesty tacitly accepts that the RCMP reclassification of the Swiss Arms and the 858, and I really want to concentrate now on the Swiss Arms,
yeah,
that the Swiss Arms reclassification is valid. It does not challenge that. Not at all. It says that because the RCMP has reclassified the Swiss Arms as now being prohibited, that those people who are now in illegal possession, contrary to Section 91 and 92 and Section 94 of the Firearms Act, of the Criminal Code, subject to prosecution and 1 year in jail, can now continue to hold those guns in their possession. Their possession, that one person's possession, without fear of the police prosecuting them for possession, or if they are to transport that gun from their home to a police station to be handed in. That's it. End of story. That's all it does. It doesn't allow anybody to take the gun out to the shooting range and shoot it, because then you're transporting with an automobile. The purpose is a different purpose than allowed in the amnesty. So that's a Section 94, transporting an unregistered prohibited firearm in a car, in a vehicle. Number two, as well, if you take that now classified as prohibited Swiss Arms that you worked hard, you earned your money, you saved it up, you traded other guns, and you put $4,000 into that thing, because that's generally what your outfit's going to cost you with tax. Okay, you got $4,000 in your classic green and your special black, and you want to take that out and do a little shooting. Well, I got to tell you, you're going to do 3 years in jail. You're going to have a gun in an unauthorized place. You're going to have it with ammunition available. And if arrested, you'll do 3 years. I got to tell you, they'll take all the guns out of your house and you'll be on a home arrest bail release. You'll find out just how vicious the state can be when you do that. So this is a very limited amnesty. If you want to give the gun to your friend, you want to give it to your brother. The two of you live together and say, brother, you take that gun. That's an illegal transfer. That's trafficking in firearms. Minimum mandatory, 1 year in jail. People aren't always aware of this. That's why I'm glad to point this out, because that is a jail term offense.
Absolutely. So can you transport the firearms that are now prohibited? No. Can you take them out hunting or to the range to shoot them? No. Can you sell them or transfer them to another gun owner? No. Here's another question that's interesting. Storage. It's purported that this is now a full auto receiver. So conceivably, if something were to happen and someone were to come in and inspect your storage, the rules for storing a fully automatic firearm, prohib, are different than, of course, for non-restricted. So people may actually have to change their storage. Or would you even say, just to be safe, remove the bolt carrier group from your firearm, just in case they purport
well,
that it's full
absolutely,
auto?
Absolutely. I mean, this is something that struck me by the time I ended reading the amnesty and having dealt with other amnesties and how the prosecutors and the police and the guns and gangs who advise the police, how they twist the interpretations to minimize the amnesties. By the time I got through reading the couple paragraphs, which didn't take long, of course, it sprung to mind that storage has to be changed. Now, we have 20,000 people out there in Canada. 2,000 have Swiss arms. And it's a little different with the 858, so I'm going to talk about the Swiss arms here first. The Swiss arms is alleged to be a full auto receiver. That's what the allegation is. The allegation is it's based on the 550 receiver, not the 540 receiver. Now, apparently, they said the RCMP made some demonstration about dropping in some parts from a full auto, and they made the classic green run full auto. I have not had that confirmed. But that is the scuttlebutt, and it comes from reliable sources. So that means that's a full auto receiver. You don't have to do anything. It's not converted. It is a full auto receiver. Now, if you have a full auto, you don't store it with just a trigger lock on it in your bedroom. You don't store it by just putting it in a safe and locking it up. You have to, well, you can if it's in a safe, but if you put it in a cabinet, you have to remove the bolt, drop it right out, and then you have to have the barreled receiver and everything else, you know, the stock, etc., locked up in a safe. And if you're doubtful that it's a safe, you got to put a trigger lock on it. And then the bolt has to be taken to another room and locked up in a separate container. That's how you store a prohib. Now, let's just say that you had a break-in because, you know, whatever. It's springtime. People are out there to trying to, you know, make some money, and they want to go steal your goodies. So they come into your house, and they break in. They take your stereo. They take your passport, and they take your cash, call the cops. The cops come in. They say, oh, yeah, wait a minute. We looked through all your house, or you know, alarm force called, and we went through your house because you weren't there. You were somewhere else. And we found this gun, and it just had a trigger lock on it. But it's a prohibited gun. We're charging you with unsafe storage.
There's the charge. There's the big-time charge that gets laid every time.
That is it. Every time. Right or wrong, they lay the charge. Now, you have no amnesty for that. Mm-hmm. You have no excuse. They didn't tell you. They don't have to tell you. You know it's reclassified. Even if you don't know it's reclassified, too bad. They'll lay the charge. So you got to do it. On the 858s, it's a little different because they are, quote, converted full autos. So you don't have to drop the bolt out, but you definitely have to treat it like a restricted firearm now. Mm-hmm. But with the Swiss, you got to treat it like a full auto. Because if not, not that I'm giving this away and encouraging the police to do this, they know it now. Thank God I can tell you. And somebody doesn't have to tell you from the prisoner's dock or from being locked up with handcuffs and leg irons on, trying to get out and get bail to get back to work and see their family.
All right, so let's get on to a popular topic people debate on the internet. What do we do if we have to turn the guns in? A lot of people say, well, you know what? I've got a lot of money in this gun. It's a $4,000 gun. I don't want to give everything up on it. You know, maybe I can strip the parts off, take off the magazines, the stock, I have a parts kit, spare barrel, whatever. Strip everything apart, keep that, and just turn over the receiver. What would happen if someone tried to strip their gun and just hand over the receiver?
They would still leave themselves open to charges. You see, it's really different when you're dealing with full auto. When you're dealing with converted auto and when you're dealing with full auto, you have to recognize that every part of a full auto that is used only in a full auto is also a prohibited device. You have to go look at the definition of prohibited device, because it says any part exclusively designed for the use in a full auto firearm is in and of itself a prohibited device. Now, that means, and it's not just full auto, by the way, it means that if it's any part that is only used in that prohibited classification or configuration of the gun is a prohibited device. We'll stay here on this point. So that means that because the barrels are unique to the Swiss Arms receiver, then they are prohibited devices when removed. The stock is the same way. The scope mount is also unique to the Swiss Arms receiver and very pricey. I think they're about $500. And that too is a prohibited device. If the police wanted to get snarky and remembering the idea that why does a shark bite? And the answer is because it can. Then stripping this out and using it, thinking that you're gaining some headway, isn't any good at all. I mean, I don't know about the mags, but I think the mags are unique to these as well. A lot of these more sophisticated guns have that. I don't think that they share them with an AR or anything else.
Yeah, I think without any kind of determination on every single part of the rifle, if you were to strip every spring, every screw, every little piece out, there's a chance that some of those pieces will be unique. So stripping everything off and keeping it, you're opening up yourself to that chance that if even one component, and it could just be a screw or a tiny spring, is unique to that gun, then you're in trouble.
Oh, yeah, and they will get that deep. Believe me, when the police get at something and the new chain of command is the police officer grabs it, he sends it up to the Guns and Gangs Verifier in the community police office. They have a regional headquarters for all these guns and gangs. These people are trained to find a reason to charge you. They are trained to lay charges, and they do.
Yep, and they'll sit there with your parts kit, all your accessories, everything you stripped off, and go through absolutely piece by piece looking for the one piece that is unique to that gun. Then it's unique to full auto. Now you're possession of full auto parts.
Yeah, you're right on.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, with all this going on, we've seen some very interesting things lately. We've seen the kicking in of doors in High River, officers taking legally owned firearms, even in areas where there was no flooding. We've got these changes to the FRT happening somewhat close to a federal election cycle. We had the announcement of first a 5-year amnesty was then cut to 2 years. You know, some weird stuff going on here. Like, what do you think this is? I mean, is it, what's going on?
It is a full court press against the innocent gun owner. You see, what really stands out in this is a short 30 seconds on High River. On the 24th of that month, I'm sorry, I just lost to history right now, last year, about a year ago, it was this month, in fact, there was, on the 24th, the Department of National Defense Armed Forces said that there's no longer a risk to life or limb of anybody remaining in High River. And at that time, the RCMP had, together with being transported around the community by armed forces personnel in boats and trucks, had kicked in about 600 doors. Well, the military pulled out that day because they said, we're not needed here. No further risk of life or limb. The next day, the RCMP started a campaign and kicked in 1,200 more doors. That's upsetting because there was no reason. And there had been no order to do that given under the Emergency Measures Act of Alberta by the mayor, who he had the power to do that, and he did not make that order. So therefore, they were outside of their criminal law powers as well. And there are documents that have absolutely shown this, and reports, and these reports were made by the co-team of the RCMP and armed forces who were there occupying and protecting the residents of High River. That was step one. Now, what happened here on the Swiss Arms, and this is what I have heard from reliable sources, is that the RCMP came to the Minister Blaney and they said, well, we can make one of these classic greens run full auto. And there was a demonstration and they said, well, we're going to change these to prohibited class. And the issue of how many people own that came up, and it was, oh, maybe about a couple hundred, 200 maybe. Blaney says, oh, okay. The next morning, they did it to all of the Swiss Arms. Blaney didn't know. Later on during the day, after I and some other importers and people had double-checked all this information, because I learned about this that evening. I was up all night communicating with people, digging into this. As soon as we could get on the FRT, we found that they'd done it to all the Swiss Arms. We immediately printed that out. We sent emails, we sent faxes to members of Parliament, who then got a hold of Minister of Public Safety, Blaney, during Parliament, during a break. And guess what? He was in shock. He was in absolute shock, because he had not authorized this and he was not told about all the other Swiss Arms going. And so because of that, and his great concern, what he did was he communicated that great concern to the RCMP. Now, you'd think that when the boss tells you he's upset with what you've done, and you got to remember, the Minister of Public Safety was really the boss of all the police in Canada. Maybe not precisely at law, but definitely morally, figuratively. You know, he's part of cabinet. These are the captains of the ship who run Canada. Well, what did they do the next day? They ignored the boss, and they made the 858s prohibited. Wow. And then over the weekend, they added all the 858s since 2007, and they made them prohibited on this report. And they never even talked to the boss. They never talked to Blaney. They never talked to anybody in cabinet. They didn't even talk to nobody. No MP. No person whatsoever. And they took these rogue acts in direct defiance of the Parliament of Canada. The Parliament of Canada expresses the will of us Canadians.
Now, just an interesting thing to point out, and people have talked about the registry, which is supposed to be gone. And people have said in conjecture around High River, how would people know which doors to kick in or where to find the firearms? The registry, in different forms, I think has been obtained by people in the media. People have posted redacted versions of it with pieces of data missing, modified versions of it. Of course, Quebec is still holding on to a portion of it. I think it's safe to say that with the ease at which things on computers can be copied, there's a likelihood that out there are copies of the Long Gun Registry. Would it be illegal for the RCMP to possess a copy of the Long Gun Registry that is supposed to be deleted or gone?
It is illegal at this point. It's illegal. In fact, Vic Taze, when he was Minister of Public Safety, went so far as to say that the books are to be destroyed. In other words, the originating books, which, you know, on all the firearms transfers and all the dealers, the CFO, as part of their licensing, gives them a book. The book does not belong to the dealer. The book is the property of the CFO, which also becomes the property of the Registrar of Firearms, who is led by the RCMP. Now, that means that those are not to exist. It's illegal for them to exist, except to the extent of restricted and prohibited firearms that are registered, but not for non-restricteds. So it's not supposed to exist. And actually, therein lies the conundrum. The conundrum is the move and timing of this reclassification. It's done in the winter. It's done during the heated debate and inquiries over, during the inquiry over High River. It's a bold move by any person when they're under criticism to then make another even bolder move to affect not just a community, but everyone in Canada, 20,000 people in Canada. You know, I go back, and in my research and in my information I have from doing these cases for decades, I have seen and reread recently emails dating from the year 2005. I was going to say 2005, but 2005 is a better pronunciation, whereby senior people at the RCMP Forensic Lab were communicating about 100 guns. I don't have the list, but about 100 guns.
And I've heard other people say that they have seen or heard of a list of certain guns that they would want to reclassify.
Yeah, so it tells me that the conundrum is, why would the RCMP wait until after the loss of the Long Gun Registry and then say, oh, you see, we need it back because these things can happen. Oh, sorry. You know what's a big part of the problem? Is the exact same. I'm not talking about the lab, the RCMP Forensic Lab doing the reclassification because a new person came in and had a new idea. No. It's the same senior evaluators who said these were non-restricted who have gone back and made a changed mind opinion without explanation. What kind of reliability is that? It's not the kind of reliability we Canadians, who live in a very free and a very tolerant society, can endure.
And now before we wrap up, I want to get onto something. It's just an interesting wrinkle. A while back, a company started offering insurance for gun owners. And that's not your regular type of insurance for shooting activities. It was actually insurance against legal action taken against you as a lawful gun owner. When it came out, I think it was only a few $100 a year. I can't remember.
$100.
Yeah, $100 a year, something like that.
$99.
Yeah, I'm not affiliated with it. I have no affiliation with it. But I'm mentioning it now because this is interesting because there are a lot of folks out there. I saw one gentleman on the news. I believe he was a doctor. He owned the entire collection, it seemed, of Swiss Arms Rifle, the Seasons collections, all the different special editions. Each gun itself worth about $4,000. It's a substantial amount of money.
Over $35,000 worth of legally obtained firearms, and he is a man who is a great gentleman, a great healer of Canadians, who has given his life to maintaining the health of a city in Canada.
Now, here's the question I have to ask you, Ed, because you are a lawyer. Do you know of anyone who has purchased this insurance who's been affected by this? Because there's a good chance that someone has an 858 or a Swiss Arms and they've purchased this insurance. Has anyone come forward? Because this would be the perfect time to use it.
Well, the time to use it is that insurance, and I know a lot about it because, quite frankly, I'm the lawyer designated under it.
Okay.
Depending on the region in Canada where you are, then I redesignate the case over to lawyers who I trust and who have a proven track record, and then I continue to work on the case with them. Well, I got to tell you, that is to deal with a charge that has been laid.
So right now there is no charge laid. We have a change in the FRT and we have an amnesty, but until someone is criminally charged, that insurance doesn't kick in. Again, box defense.
It'd be a prisoner's box issue. That's a heck of a way to put it, but that's true. It's a prisoner's box situation. That insurance doesn't pay for challenging reclassification. It deals with defending a criminal issue.
Okay.
By way, so if you were to, be driving down the road, taking your Swiss Arms out to do a little coyote shooting now, got caught, yeah, it would kick in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you had it. It's good, I got to see, that comes from a European model, because in Europe, you don't even drive on the road without that kind of legal defense insurance. Because, if your fine depends on how fast you went and how much your house is worth and how much you earn. And these fines can be huge, like tens of thousands of dollars for going 50K over the limit. We don't have that experience in Canada. So actually what happened was an insurer who has that type of insurance in Europe has come to North America, and then it got also brought into the firearms area in Canada.
Okay, so we're not going to be able to fund a battle against reclassification with this insurance. It would have to be someone getting a criminal charge against them in order to have that defense, but still, definitely worth it. So let's talk about what people can do to help the situation. You're leading class action lawsuits on behalf of the Swiss Arms owners and CZ858 owners. Each is a separate action. However, if we want to support these challenges and people might have these guns at home, they can actually send in a contribution to you in trust. So you would send the contribution by check to Edward L. Berlew, that's E-D-W-A-R-D, middle initial L, Berlew, B-U-R-L-E-W. The address is 16 John Street, that's in Thornhill, Ontario. The postal code is Larry 3 Thomas 1 X-ray 8. If you want to donate by credit card in trust, you can contact the office. If you're local, 905-882-2422. That's 905-882-2422. And if you're out of province or further away, you can go ahead and call 1-888-GUN-LOSS. That's a toll-free call. And you can make a donation in trust. And if you're making your check, either write Swiss Arms in Trust or CZ in Trust with a check to Edward L. Berlew. And, of course, it's always lead by example. So I will, of course, start off by making my contribution specifically to the Swiss Arms because I see that as being the media darling in terms of grabbing the most headlines and attention. So I see that as a cause that I want to get behind. And we'll be doing some other things coming soon to help fund this challenge.
Well, that's a very generous move that you've made, and thank you very much. It has to come with a paper trail. That's why I've had people wondering in the past, how come I can't do this by electronic money transfer? The problem is that because it goes into trust, there is a rule that we lawyers have to obey, and it's a very strictly enforced rule, that all money that comes into our trust account has to have a paper trail. And the law societies have not yet recognized that an electronic money transfer is sufficient paper trail to satisfy our trust reporting requirements. That's the only answer I can give to that, because I know people will raise that.
Yeah,
as
people
an issue.
Will say, "Why can't I do EMT?" And it's a legal reason.
It is. And believe me, if I could, I would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
but writing a check is easy. Throw it in the mail. Put a stamp on it and send it in. The other thing too is I want to thank you so much for everything you do, working for the cause. You do paid work, and of course you do work on your own time, and not just in terms of legal things, but in helping out different associations or different businesses, importers or charities or groups that just involve promoting the shooting sport. So a lot of people spend a lot of time whining. to whine. That's a whine that you can get behind. So I've got a bottle of whine as opposed to the traditional one, which is moaning and complaining. So instead of moaning and complaining, send in trust to Ed Berlew. This has no middleman. This goes directly to the fight. You're not sending it to an association who then might divert it to something else or take a cut or whatever. This is going straight into action. If you've written letters to your member of parliament, if you've gotten out there and gotten your voice heard and going, what's next? What can I do next? What concrete action can I take? Here's some concrete action you can take. This is actually going straight into the fight. So, Ed, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Is there anything you'd like to add before we go?
Well, I'd like to say this, that we've received some donations already. We've had people call in. I've got a binder, a 2-inch binder already full of people. And I'm now at the point where I have to take this action forward in a very hard and real way. I've got contributions from clubs. I've got contributions from importers, other businesses. This is going to be a very strong point for bringing the community together. And it's not about the money. It's about coming together and supporting ourselves. Because people can say, well, I've got an 870 or I've got a Mossberg 500. It's not my gun. Well, I got to tell you, you're next.
Yep, they're coming for you.
You're next. Yep. And we're all next. There's strong talk, and has been for the last decade, of getting rid of all semi-automatic firearms, regardless of caliber, regardless of action, whether they have a fancy AAA Clara Walnut stock or a black plastic stock will make no difference to the gun-grabbing legislators and gun-grabbing police. It's time we took a stand.
Thanks, Ed, so much for your time. Much appreciated. Great having you on the podcast again. I think our listeners needed this information. They need that practical knowledge because they're just hearing rumors and stuff on the internet. So it's great to get concrete information from you. So thank you very much. And I know I'll be seeing you at an event in the near future.
I've enjoyed this very much. And thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Support your local shooting ranges, firearms retailers, and your national firearms organizations. And be good to each other and stay safe. Until next time, I'm your host, Chris Anderson.
Cool. Well, I look forward to listening to that because I haven't actually listened to it yet. Have you guys?
No.
Chris who? Chris Anderson.
Okay, on to listener feedback. We've got one email this week from some guy named Mario.
Yeah, and it's not really anything about guns, so.
Oh, so we'll just get.
No, we're going to read it anyway.
Mario says, good day, gents. The last 30 to 60 days were quite busy, crazy for us. We finished our house hunting, and after over 45 houses visited, we finally broke down and bought a nice bungalow, and go figure, it's located only a 10-minute walk from my brother Jasmine's house. So I will be making a lot more trips to his house to help him prep brass casings and reloading. I was listening to episode 52 and decided to write in to answer your question as to on why Kinder Surprise is banned in the U.S. Well, here it is. There are two reasons why these delicious treats are illegal in the U.S. One reason is the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission claims that the toys are a choking hazard for small children.
Only the dumb ones.
Yeah.
Only the ones that put them in their mouth.
Yeah.
All of the toys are relatively small, and some contain even tinier pieces that need to be put together. Kinder eggs have a warning on the package in several languages that they are only suitable for ages 3 and up, which should be enough to unban them.
And aside, let's face it, what 3-year-old can't read?
Aside from children potentially choking on the toys, the real reason Kinder eggs are banned is the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act of 1938. This act prohibits the embedding of non-food items completely enclosed inside food items, unless the non-edible part has a functioning value. For example, a lollipop or popsicle stick is not edible, but is a useful handle. This act was originally put in place to prevent the addition of hazardous items to processed foods and has never been changed. P.S. Can't wait to see all of you again at the charity shoot. Special thanks, shout out to all that contributed to raise additional funds for the Lauren Tides Autism Foundation. It's much appreciated. We will try to make the trip out to NB as a mini vacation, same as last year. My wife is also eager to spend some time with Christina. And she may get a chance to spend time with all of our wives, I think, because I think they're all going to be there.
Yeah, we're all going. Yeah.
Yeah. So he says, see, talk to you soon. That's Mario. Any shout outs? No shout outs?
No. Unless I can shout out my mechanic.
Shout at.
I'm going to shout at my mechanic, actually.
I got a quick one when you're done yelling at your mechanic.
Oh, no, I'm okay. I just want to say that my mechanic didn't actually fix my truck. I did, but it was after I paid him $1,000 to do it. That was fun.
Okay, so your mechanic is the opposite of Casey at Tactical Ordnance in Ontario and Sean at Freedom Ventures. Both of these guys gave me my firearms back ahead of schedule. The prices were better than I anticipated. And as a matter of fact, it was agreed that I was going to pay them by EMT. And before I even sent them the EMT, they shipped me the guns anyway. So
yep. Those are stand-up. Well, I don't know about Sean, but I've dealt with Casey before, and Casey is a stand-up guy. You need shotgun work done, Casey at TACORD. I cannot recommend him enough.
And he's not only will customize your shotgun, he's making custom parts for KSGs. He's come up with a van comp system for the KSG. I've seen video of it, and I've seen the pattern that it produces. It might be something that you should look into, Owen, and it could interest you. I don't know. Go check out his website. So that's Tactical Ordnance Ontario, kids, if you want some custom shotgun work. I wish Matthew had told me about this guy ahead of time. I had to learn about him from Chris.
No, it would have been really cool if I had told you about him, like, I don't know, 2 years ago. When I got shotgun work done to my shotgun, and I told you all about them, but, you know.
Yeah.
So be sure to join one or both of our National Firearms Associations, the CSSA and the NFA, and check us out on the Gunners of Canada. Like us on Facebook. We are kind of stalled at 975 likes. And also check out all the other great shows on both the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. So I think that's everything. Why don't you take us out?
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Shoot safe, shoot straight, shoot off. I'm Ron Burgundy.
See you next week.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Beep.
No, really, go.
Oh, sorry. Now I'm like catching up on text on my phone because...
Yeah, it sounds about right.
I haven't looked at it in a long time.
Yeah.
I don't want to be lead host. Do I have to be lead host?
Yeah.
Who's our guest this week anyway?
Chris Anderson. He has done a 45-minute show, and he is doesn't have the technical capabilities right now to host it himself, and so we're going to host this show for him. It is him talking with Ed Burlew regarding the Ian Thompson case.
Oh, okay.
I think. I haven't listened to it yet.
So I'll sound like a total tool when...
You get it wrong.
When I say yes. Okay. I'm just not going to say that. I'm not going to say anything about...
Here's what you do, Owen. Content. You say... Matthew's now going to introduce him. That's how that bullet is dodged, my friend.
Yep.